High resolution color graphics.
This land of high technology.
The revolution in technology that made the information age possible.
Those kids are not afraid of computers.
Welcome to This Week in Retro for the week of August 10th, 2020.
Coming up on today's show,
the luggable form factor is back.
There is still life in the cassette tape in 2020.
Intellivision's Amico reboot is delayed.
Nintendo's profits are booming.
And the Spectrum Next returns to Kickstarter.
All this and more on This Week in Retro.
Up-to-date news
for out-of-date tech.
Whatever happened to the luggable form factor? Well, I think we all know the answer to that. The laptop came along as the size of tech reduced down, and I can't think there's actually anyone out there who misses the luggable. We're talking about machines like the Osborne 1 and the Commodore SX64. And it's that SX64 that sticks in my mind, especially because some of you may recall that there's an advert from around 1983 when it was released of a businessman with his shirt open, hairy chest proudly on display, sat beside a pool using his luggable computer. And in the background, there were bikini-clad ladies frolicking away. So I'm wondering if media workstations have seen that and they've decided to try and sell that lifestyle to us once again with their brand new luggable computer here and now in 2020. Let me give you the specs of it. This is an AMD Ryzen Threadripper 3990X based machine, and it can be specced up to have an RTX 2080 Ti video card. And there's even a dual CPU version that you can choose. The design, it looks kind of like a black tower PC with a handle on the top and a screen strapped to the front. It definitely falls within the luggable category. There's no weight specified for the unit, but it looks pretty hefty. And this all looks pretty legit on the Media Workstation's website, but over at PCGamer.com, they have speculated that this could be a ruse due to some inconsistencies in the specs that they've spotted. So I think this is a story, John, that's worth keeping an eye on to see if it does come true. But it certainly does beg the question for me, is there even a need for a luggable in the modern day?
Well, that's a good question, Neil. I think that there is. I think that if you travel around to any video production on-set facilities, you'll find that people are doing just what this project proposes to do without the form factor, where you have these carts that are rolling around constantly that have monitors and big power PCs, you know, put on them, and they're constantly going from one place to the next because these people need that kind of graphical processing power on site. I know that in the Mac world, there are all kinds of third-party products that allow you to more easily transport the new, $10 million Mac Pro hither and thither. And if they can put together an attractive package that folds up, that can fold the monitor against the machine in a clamshell-like design, but still allow you to undo it and use it as normal for travel purposes, I think that there's definitely a spot in the market for that. And who knows, Neil, this may be the harbinger of the return of the LAN party, where you take your big system to a big open warehouse and set it up and play computer games next to the person next to you.
The rise of the $1 million LAN party, because at $10,000 a piece for the fully specced out one, this isn't cheap. But I think you're on the right lines there, because the website says that this company creates hardware for media professionals. So it's very much aimed at that market that you've identified. I guess it's one to keep an eye on if it should materialize. I think I'm looking forward to seeing someone running a Commodore SX64 emulator on a $10,000 modern day luggable. That's the only reason I want to see this thing.
Neil, our next story is the death of the humble cassette tape has been greatly exaggerated. Tape technology continues to leap forward thanks to Japanese firm LTO, whose flagship project, the LTO-8, delivers 12 terabytes of storage on a reel of tape that's 960 meters long and 12 millimeters wide. This puts the storage density of the LTO-8 at just under 1 terabyte per square meter. Compare this to the venerable C90 tape with its length of just 135 meters. However, that same C90 cassette, using the same storage density as the LTO, has the capacity to hold 506 gigabytes of data, or around 100,000 MP3s.
Now, this story fascinates me. I do like to keep an eye on how the LTO tapes are progressing, because in a former life, I was a backup administrator, just specifically concentrating for a company only on backups. And even when you're not in that job, any job in IT, there's always going to be an element of monitoring the backups. Nobody really likes it, but somebody has to do it. And back then I was using tech all the way through to LTO4 tapes, using enterprise servers. We were using carousels that you loaded up with tapes. So it wasn't just the capacity of one tape. You had terabytes and terabytes once you'd put 20 tapes into this thing. And I love them. They were fast. They were reliable. They were chunky enough not to get broken when they were being transported. Long live the LTO, I say.
Wow. So what do you think about the future of LTO for home use? Can you foresee a situation where people give up their SSDs to switch back over to the tape?
Well, if you see one of these LTO tapes, they are a chunky tape. So it's not like something that you could slip into a Walkman and walk around with on your hip. They're quite big things. So I don't see them becoming something for the consumer, but I think they've got a long life left in them in the enterprise.
Neil, I've got to say, I disagree with you. Look at the rise of vinyl. Kids these days, they want something big. They want something chunky. I guarantee you within 5 years, we're going to see the first hipsters walk down Madison Avenue wearing a huge, 50-pound Walkman clipped to their hip with one of these LTO tapes in it.
I'll take that bet, John. I'll take that bet, and I will gladly collect my money.
You can read more about new developments in cassette technology in Desiree Athlow's article in TechRadar. And that story was submitted on our subreddit by Paul, a.k.a. Hermsky.
And that leads us quite nicely into our next story, which was submitted by Pixels at Dawn. This is all about a self-contained tape solution for retro fans. It was a very popular story that broke on Twitter, posted by Jam Hamster. He's managed to squeeze an Arduino inside a regular cassette tape casing with battery and screen in there. It's a really tight squeeze, but he's also managed to get some buttons in as well. And the question is, why would you do this? Well, you can store in this your audio files of your favorite 8-bit video games. Select a game on the screen on the cassette tape itself using the buttons, put the tape into your micro, let's say a ZX Spectrum, and then you load the games like it's the real thing. It's quite a wonderful little project. So all credit to Jam Hamster for creating this.
So Neil, this is one of many solutions for playing your older games on the original system in a more time expedient manner. Is something like this needed in the current scene?
I think it's one of those things where there's no reason to question it. It's a fun thing. I'm glad that this thing exists, whether I need it or not. But thinking more objectively about it, it is a balance between the authentic experience of putting a tape in, tapes which are now failing, and the instant loading times of those SD card solutions like the DIV MMC unit. So personally, I don't miss tape loading times, but it is a fun halfway house. And I think more importantly, if it motivates people to pick up an Arduino, have a go creating a project like this, and getting familiar with the Arduino, then it's a good thing.
Here's what I do, Neil. I'd buy about 50 or 60 of these Arduino boards and put them into cassette housings. Once I'd have the project complete, I'd put one tape file apiece on them, throw away all my old specky tapes, and just insert them into the cassette tape holder. That way I can have the full experience without the load time. You open up the cassette, you see the instructions, you see the art, you put the cassette in, then when you're done, you have to take it back out.
It's massive overkill, and I love it.
So does this mean that you still need a cassette deck for those micros where the data set was an optional extra?
Well, this is the fun thing, because he's also managed to squeeze a headphone socket into the side of the tape. So you could plug into that if you wanted to test out some micros and you don't have the tape deck for it. And coming back to your previous scenario of hipsters walking down the street with their Walkman again, you could just put this tape in your pocket, plug the headphones into the headphone socket and listen to it that way. So I know, maybe the hipsters will pick up on that instead of the LTO tapes.
Maybe so. Neil, some unfortunate news for Intellivision fans everywhere. The Amico reboot is being delayed until next year. The Amico, a crowdfunded spiritual successor to the Mattel Intellivision that raised over $5 million in backing, has been delayed. Originally slated for release in October, CEO Tommy Tallarico announced during a demo last week that due to COVID-19 challenges, Founders Edition backers wouldn't be receiving their units until April 3rd, 2021. So, Neil, have you seen the Amico in action?
I'm going to be honest, I struggled to get on board with this because I've looked at the trailers with Tommy Tallarico in there. And in the first few seconds, he talks about how he's going to shake up the gaming industry with his amazing new machine. But I think you've got to have a little bit more than what they're showing on the trailer. I don't know what this big shakeup is that he's promising. I don't know what he's... I just don't get it, John.
Well,
tell me, what is it?
You know, I've spent some time with Mr. Tallarico, not personally, not intimately, but with his video. And the games do look fun. I mean, it does look like you could have some enjoyment out of these. And they do look better than original Intellivision games. A lot of them have updated graphics. Do you remember in the PlayStation 1 era days when we had sort of the first real push for retro software being updated for the new millennium? Mm-hmm. It's very similar to that, where these games look like sort of Java based or maybe phone based games of arcade classics like Moon Patrol or Night Stalker or something like that. However, these games are widely available everywhere. You don't need a special console to play them. Putting this thing out, it's hard to say it's risky because this guy obviously has the backing. This thing is going to be sold in major U.S. Retail stores. It's going to be sold in places like Target and Walmart. And I just don't see people paying slightly less than what they can pay to get a Switch for, to get, sort of a substandard retro-based inspired console. I don't see the appeal at $250. If this was $99, maybe, but $300 gets you a Switch. I think $250 might get you a Switch Lite, and you're going to get all of the same kinds of games that you can get on the Amico, plus Mario, plus Animal Crossing. So this one just doesn't do it for me, Neil. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but from the way you describe it, it doesn't seem to offer anything more than a cheap Chinese box that's based on Android can give you. And that gives you access to all of the games in the Android store, which will undoubtedly be a huge amount more games than this thing has on launch. And internationally, I don't think the Intellivision name has a huge appeal. It certainly doesn't over here in the UK. So I think it's more of an American thing. Mm-hmm. Will they get enough sales? I doubt it.
If you are interested, I know that we've really talked it up. We've got you excited to pre-order this thing. If you want one, you can pre-order one right now for $250. You can put down a $100 deposit to reserve your space in line through the link in the show notes.
Don't all rush at once. So, John, Nintendo is reporting a huge surge in profits. This is a story submitted by Paul, aka Hermsky, once again. Thank you, Paul. Nintendo have reported a surge of 428% in profits as a result of lockdown gaming. This was reported by Ryan Brown on CNBC, and then later in the Financial Times, they bumped it up to 541%. The company said that it was a wild jump that reflects just how much the video game industry has benefited from the coronavirus pandemic. They reported an operating profit of $1.4 billion in the April to June quarter, and the Switch and Switch Lite sales increased 167% in that quarter. They've also sold 22.4 million copies of the latest Animal Crossing game. So, John, I don't know that there's ever been a surge that big in gaming that I can think of. I don't think it's a huge surprise to anyone that we've seen this surge during lockdown. But I can't really think of another time in gaming history that we might have seen such a huge uptake in gaming. Can you?
No. This is a singular event. I mean, there have been times in the past where I think you've seen bumps. For example, in the early 2000s, when you started getting broadband internet connections to college dorm rooms, I think that there was a surge in things like MMOs and in first-person shooters. But again, we're talking about a subset of a subset here versus across the board. Everybody is playing games all the time because everybody is stuck at home. This is a real boon to the video game industry, and in particular Nintendo, because Animal Crossing in a lot of ways has become the official mascot game of the pandemic.
Yeah, the closest thing I could find to this kind of bump was in 2009. It wasn't quite to this extent, but CNET reported a 35 to 40% increase in game sales back then. And this, remember, was at the time of the banking crisis. Back then, they compared the rise in video game sales to the consumption of musicals in the 1930s during another financial crash. So there does seem to be clear evidence now that in the face of adversity, this time the virus, that people do look to entertainment for comfort. And what could we possibly need more comforting from than an international pandemic?
Neil, I've got some great news. You can now download and run macOS 8.1 on your PC as a standalone application. One of the hardest software environments to run well on a modern computer is classic Macintosh. There's a lot of emulators out there. Not a lot. There's a few. There's Sheepshaver. There's Basilisk 2. It's a tough word to say. There's Mini VMac, but these are difficult to configure and get up and running. Trust me. There's some limited browser-based emulators out there, too, but they're easy to use, but they don't allow you to save anything locally, and it's oftentimes difficult to load your own programs into the system. So we finally have an alternative. A Slack developer named Felix Riesberg has used a framework called Electron to embed a web-based version of Basilisk 2 into a standalone native app. This means by downloading one .exe file, you have a fully functioning Mac OS 8 desktop on your Windows, Mac, or Linux machine, complete with shared folders. Now, Neil, were you a classic Mac user back in the day?
Absolutely not. I was an Amiga user, and then I was a PC user. Macintosh, we did have it over here in the UK, but it wasn't huge. We were more into our homegrown 8-bits over here. Mm-hmm. I have enjoyed coming up to speed with them and getting to know what they are capable of. A lot of similarities in their architecture between the Mac and the Amiga, albeit without the custom chips of the Amiga, which, of course, makes it very easy to emulate a classic Mac on an Amiga. I put a video together once called "Is the Amiga the Fastest Mac?" Or words to that effect, and it ran it beautifully. So I had a great time getting to know the Mac on an Amiga.
Yeah, I remember that video. It was fantastic. So have you ever tried to emulate any Macs on your modern PCs?
I have. I've used Sheepshaver and I've used Basilisk 2, which, as you've described, this thing is really all packaged up in with Basilisk 2. And that shared folder functionality is what really stands out for me, because it sounds like it makes it completely seamless.
It does.
Is there a drag and drop capability?
Exactly. It loads a folder when you run the .exe on your system, and you just drag and drop things into that folder, and boom, they appear on the desktop. It's almost magical. As someone that has spent years trying to recapture sort of a misplaced nostalgia for classic Macs, and spending lots of money on a couple different models that I remember from my youth, this really does everything that I wanted it to do. Classic Macs are temperamental. They often are slower than one might remember in terms of the GUI. Because the GUI is so similar to modern day interfaces, you tend to expect more out of them versus when you're working with something a little bit more abstract. You can forgive slowdown and things like that. So this will be my go-to Mac emulation experience from now on. And I'm thinking about just retiring my G4s and G3s to the shelf and using this exclusively.
And I understand that this just runs as fast as the machine will allow it to underneath. I'm guessing there's some options to disable that perhaps, but it will probably be the fastest Mac experience, classic Mac experience that you can find. If we were to go out and grab this, is there one piece of software that you would recommend we give a go?
Oh, absolutely. I would recommend any of Freeverse's games, especially if you like card games. They've got Burning Monkey Casino, Burning Monkey Mahjong, and Burning Monkey Solitaire. Those are all fantastic. It's really a shame the Mac is not famous for its gaming prowess, but there are a couple Mac-exclusive developers that really do good work. So I encourage you to check them out. MacintoshGarden.org is a good place to start. Just run a couple searches, and of course, all the classic black and white Mac software is compatible: Glider, Dark Castle, etc. So, if you want to check this thing out, go over to Felix's GitHub page, which is linked in the show notes, and you can download this and go to town.
So I was very excited to see that the ZX Spectrum Next has returned to Kickstarter for a second round. It's 38 years after the launch of the original Speccy and the newest incarnation of that platform. The Spectrum Next was launched through Kickstarter originally in 2017, and it promised a hybrid of classic and current computing through what has to be the most iconic UK-produced computer of all time. The Next features FPGA simulation of the entire range of Z80 processors found in the line, speed boosting capabilities, and of course, that ultra sexy form factor. Not to mention full compatibility with all classic Speccy software, and a slate of new games available to play. Following hot on the heels of the first iteration of the Next, this version 2 promises to be an even more expanded experience, with a multitude of features not found in the original Next. In addition, the Next Mark II features updated expansion port protection, a repositioning of the Wi-Fi module for less interference and a boosted signal, and digital port power feedback mitigation. So John, I know you're very familiar with the ZX Spectrum, having used it a lot on your own show. What are your thoughts on the Next?
Boy, if I was a person that had unlimited money, I would buy a ton of these things because, number one, these guys know how to market a product. They did a fantastic job on delivering the first. Their Kickstarter is littered with the corpses of so many failed classic computer and console reboots. This is really one of the few shining examples of a group that delivered exactly what they promised. And I think it has to do with a couple things. One is they are targeting the correct market. There's a tremendous amount of nostalgia for the ZX Spectrum, especially in the UK and the Commonwealth. But there's also a tremendous amount of curiosity from people outside of the UK who are curious about, you know, what this thing is and why it was such a big part of the early computing scene in England, you know, in the 80s. This was definitely helped along by the famous episode in Black Mirror, which features the ZX Spectrum. And I think that marketing this thing to an international audience through Kickstarter was a genius move because you're going to get the UK fans, but you're also going to give people a way to play the ZX Spectrum outside of the original region where PAL TVs are difficult to find. There's voltage. There are all kinds of things that make using a Spectrum difficult outside of England, and this does away with all of them. That combined with the fact that this thing can emulate every single one of the processors that was involved with it, and it has a new slate of games, some of which really look good. Some of them are sort of a little suspect to me, but if I didn't feel guilty about spending that amount of money, I would get one. How about you, Neil? Are you in on this thing? What do you think?
Well, just to get back on what you've said there, I think you've described the ZX Spectrum well. It was Jack Tramiel, when he was at Atari, who said he wanted to sell computers to the masses and not to the classes. Well, it was the ZX Spectrum that really took that to the nth degree, at under £100 for that original micro in the early 80s. It just blew away any competition. This is why the Apple II didn't really take off over here. This is why a lot of the micros that you use didn't take off, because they just couldn't compete on price.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about, well, you know, 1/17th of the price of an Apple II.
Exactly. And then coming on to this new Next, I've just popped up the Kickstarter page while we're recording this. It will undoubtedly go up a lot more by the time this is released, but it hasn't even been 24 hours since they went live with this, and it's sitting at £753,000.
Oh my gosh.
It's fast approaching a million. And that really excites me because I have backed this. I missed the first one. I've since seen it in operation at expos and absolutely loved what I've seen. So I've jumped on board and backed this for the second round. And the higher that number gets, the bigger the community is, the more appeal there is to make software for this thing. And I just want to see it go up and up and up. I'm really excited watching this.
What's your perspective on the people that are buying this as a financial investment? They saw what happened with the first Next. They saw what kinds of numbers people were getting on eBay, auctioning off, you know, their pre-order orders. Do you think that is happening again, or do you think that people are just buying this thing because it's a quality product?
I did see that people selling the original Next for huge amounts on eBay before this became live. It's interesting. I would hope that it doesn't happen again. I think if you plan to buy any retro for a financial investment, you know, you deserve what's coming to you.
there might be more sound options out there for you.
It's just far too volatile. The way they've pitched this, there's no limit as to how many Nexts they can sell on this Kickstarter. That's the beauty of Kickstarter. They can sell a million and then they know what their demand is and they go off and produce them. So it's not like at the moment there's a shortage. It's not like it's poorly advertised. Everyone knows this thing exists that's interested in one. So I'd like to think that enough people get a hold of it for scalping further down the line not to become a problem.
Yeah. Do you think that at some point you're going to end up seeing these on store shelves, just like the C64 mini consoles that have been released?
Well, I did ask the developers that when I spoke to them at an expo last year, and they were of the opinion that no, it's not going to go into stores. But I think the right demand could change everything. The right investor coming along could change everything. So I wouldn't rule it out.
So if you want to back the Next, you can do it right now. Just click on the Kickstarter page in the show notes. If you jump on board, let us know.
Today's episode of This Week in Retro comes thanks to our partners at Anchor FM. Whether you're new to the game or you have an existing successful podcast, Anchor FM offer a home where you can extend your audience and find new sponsorship opportunities to make it the most successful podcast it can be.
That's right, Neil. We love Anchor, and that's why we use them to host This Week in Retro. You should check them out at anchor.fm for more info.
So thank you for listening to This Week in Retro. Join our show subreddit and contribute your favorite stories from the world of retro.
Help us spread the word about the show by leaving us a review on your podcast app of choice, sharing our Facebook page, or just telling a retro-loving friend. See you next week for more up-to-date news
for out-of-date tech.